Hello, my friends. It's Friday, April 25th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. We got a wonderful show to take you into the weekend, all sorts of stories to get to, and the first one up on the list is the look at the Highland Park shooter who was just sentenced to 7 life sentences for the horrific mass shooting that took place on the 4th of July, 2022. We're going to take a look at what might have radicalized this young man. I'll give you 47 guesses. Also coming up on the show, our look at what continues to be our national nightmare and global humiliation, our ICE detention center, CECOT, down there in El Salvador. We'll take a look at the latest with what's going on with mass deportations now. Canicide cosplay Christy Gnome is doxing Kilmar Abrego Garcia's wife. We've got an ICE raid in Charlottesville to tell you about, and more, all sorts of stuff to catch up on there. Then the Attorney General Barbie Bondi is announcing the Anti-Christian Bias Task Force. We'll take a look at the terrible threat of Christian bias in the United States of America. In international news, the UK Supreme Court has decided that woman and sex are biological terms with respect to their Equality Act. We'll get into the weeds on the discussion of trans rights in the UK. Then a shocking story out of Florida that kind of hits into my wheelhouse, where the governor there is embroiled in a scandal for moving $10 million of Medicaid money to his wife's charity in an effort to launder it for fighting the recreational marijuana initiative there that failed in the state of Florida in the last election. I'll give you all the details. Then in our Boycott Idaho segment, we give you an amazing case that dates all the way back to 2019. A woman in Oregon whose nude photos were accessed by a sheriff thanks to her bust for weed in Idaho. It's pretty sickening details. Then at the end of the show, time for a radical rant. I'm going to tell you all about the rights thought abolishing terrible acronyms, aka TATAs. We'll get into all of the TATAs at the end of the show. But before we get to all that serious stuff, some news from the sports world, where I am so happy to announce the results of the first round of the NFL draft taking place at my beloved Lambeau Field Green Bay Packers atrium, where the number 6 overall pick in the NFL draft was Boise State running back Ashton Jeanty. He went number 6 to the Las Vegas Raiders, and that's good news for me. Of course, I'd have preferred he went to the Packers. I knew that was never going to happen, but good news that he went to the Raiders, because it follows a very complex formula that I have for football fandom, and that is I can't wish anything good for anybody that's ever beaten the Packers in the playoffs. And since the Raiders have never beaten the Packers in the playoffs, I can wish them good luck with Ashton Jeanty. Unless, of course, they end up playing the Packers. Also, speaking of good news, the latest approval numbers are out from Pew Research. President Trump's approval numbers are now sitting at 40% approve, 59% disapprove, 19 points underwater. And of course, let's dig down into my demographic, because, you know, white guys like me, we're the problem. So let me take a look at what's showing up here. For white people, he is at 49-51, 2 points underwater with white people. Gen X people, ages 50 to 64, he's at 46-53, 7 points underwater with Gen X people. For male people, 44-55, he's 11 points underwater with men. So for white Gen X men, he's underwater in all those demographics. Woohoo! Finally, guys like me are starting to see the light. Also, speaking of guys like me, high school or less, 43 to 55, he's 12 points underwater with the poorly educated like me. Oh, goody! In fact, Donald Trump is currently underwater with every demographic. 68 points down with blacks, 45 points down with Hispanics, 40 points down with Asians, 27 points down with the youngsters, 25 points down with the middle-aged, 14 points down with seniors, 25 points down with women, 27 points down with college graduates, and 44 points down with the postgraduate highly educated people. Every demographic surveyed by Pew Research shows President Trump is in the toilet, his lowest approval ratings of this second term. We need to start taking more seriously the threat of radicalized young white men in this country. We look at the epidemic of school shootings and mass shootings all throughout this country, and more often than not, they're perpetrated by some young white guy, and usually some young white guy radicalized into QAnon and right-wing conspiracy theories and eliminationist rhetoric, the great replacement theory, the kind of stuff that used to be on the fringes of 4chan, but now is mainstream and even has seats at the table in our government. And no case better illustrates this, in my view, than the case of the Highland Park shooter that was just sentenced recently. He was the one who committed the crime on July 4th, 2022, from an elevated position, taking shots at the parade there for the 4th of July. He was sentenced to 7 life sentences for the 7 people that he killed and 48 50-year sentences for the 48 people that he wounded in the attack. And the life sentences are to be served concurrently without the chance for parole, and the 50-year sentences are served, consecutive life sentences, concurrent 50-year sentences. This guy's never getting out of jail. He will be in jail for the rest of his life. He did not get the death penalty. He's in the state of Illinois, which does not have the death penalty. And I completely agree. He should not get the death penalty. We can argue about this, but we've seen that the death penalty is not a deterrent. It costs more to implement than putting someone behind bars for life. And frankly, it's just barbaric. Let me amend that. I do support the death penalty in any justice system that is 100% perfect. If you can show me a justice system that never makes a mistake, then I'm all for the death penalty. But not even in a case like this where the guy killed 7 and wounded 48. A terrible attack. But something about this attack, the guy appeared in court at his sentencing, and in the pictures I noticed that he had a tattoo on his face. He had a number of facial tattoos. But one of them that really stood out from the side was right there at his temple. He has the number 47 tattooed on his face. And I later on found this report from the news in Chicago discussing what might be this shooter's motive.
What's in a number? That's what detectives are trying to determine.
The accused gunman frequently referenced 47 in his online posts, his videos, and he even had it tattooed on his face. CBS 2 investigator Dorothy Tucker is exploring the possible meanings.
The 21-year-old suspect has a number of tattoos on his face, but the one that stands out is the number 47. It's a number he chose to place right beside his eye and his car. Big, bold, covering the passenger door. Why the number 47? What does it mean? Prosecutors indicated they put that question to the killer.
His motivation isn't necessarily clear. I don't want to go specifically into what he told investigators. However, he had some type of affinity towards the number 4 and 7, and inverse was 7-4.
The inverse of 7 and 4 is what stood out for former FBI CIA expert Javed Ali.
47 could be 7-4 equaling July 4th, the known date of his planned attack, which actually happened.
The number was also found in the graphic, sometimes disturbing music videos that the shooter produced.
It apparently comes from music that he's interested in.
But Ali says the number is not connected to hate groups.
So the number 47 does not overtly connect to known symbols or artifacts in the white supremacy or neo-Nazi movement and world. Doesn't mean that they have meanings in other sort of issues or disciplines, but at least when it comes to terrorism, there was nothing that overtly stood out to me.
However, Ali adds, prosecutors are just beginning their investigation, and the killer has a lot of material they must now study. Dorothy Tucker, CBS2 Investigators.
Okay, so I need to be fair to this CBS News station. You notice they referred to him as the accused killer because this was a report that came out in 2022, shortly after his arrest. So they're wondering, what in the world could 47 mean? What could be this guy's motivations? Well, we all know what the 47 stands for. It's the 47th president of the United States, Donald Trump. That's what 47 stands for. The guy had it on his face, the guy had it on his car. And it was 2022. Biden was president at the time. He was president number 46. So how much of a leap is it to recognize that this guy was calling for the return of Donald Trump, that he wanted president 47? And to further illustrate this, in court, he had to sign some documents, some papers. And he signed the papers, Donald Trump. He signed his own name as Donald Trump. The guy's a Trumpster. He's a MAGA. It's this. Oh, was it? It's the 7 and the 4 turned backwards. Because July 4th is 7-4, and then the 4-7 is the reverse of 7-4. No! The guy is a supporter of Trump. He's got the 47 tattoo. He's signing his name as Donald Trump. Oh, and by the way, the guy's name is Bobby Cremo III, and Cremo is spelled C-R-I-M-O. He's got Crimo right there in his name. The horror continues for Kilmar Abrego Garcia and the other hundreds of men that were human trafficked to our concentration camp in El Salvador. And now the horror continues and spreads here in the United States as well. We get this report out of the Washington Post, where the wife of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, Jennifer Vasquez Sura, began fearing for her safety and the safety of her three children after Canaside Christy Gnome's Department of Homeland, or Department of Handbag Security, I should say, shared a protective order from 2021 that prominently featured her address. Put it out on the official DHS account on X, formerly known as Twitter. Doxing this woman, letting everyone know, all these crazy MAGAs, the people, kind of people that tattoo 47 on the side of their head, let them know exactly where she lives. She told the Washington Post, quote, "I don't feel safe when the government posts my address, the house where my family lives, for everyone to see, especially when this case has gone viral and people have all sorts of opinions. So this is definitely a bit terrifying. I'm scared for my kids," end quote. When asked for comment by the Independent, because I have to read, you know, UK news media to get real stories anymore, the DHS told the Independent, quote, "These are public documents that anyone could get access to." Well, okay, yeah, they might be, but that doesn't mean that you use the government's megaphone to broadcast them to everyone. Yeah, sure, maybe Ben Shapiro, Maybe Nick Fuentes, one of these guys, goes out and digs through the records, finds the order, and posts it all over their websites. And then we can slam them for being the slime balls that they are. And we can note that the sewer that they're being distributed through. But no, you gave it the official patina of the U.S. government. You gave it the stamp of approval through an official account. You can't just say, well, it's public records. Anybody could have come through these. So now this woman and her kids have to go into a safe house, have to go into hiding. Because that's part of what this is. This is more than just mass deportations now. This is a terror campaign. We saw it in the first Trump administration when they tried to make the abduction of immigrants at the border so heinous. Kids in cages, separated families, with the purpose of thwarting people's plans to come to America. Don't come to America. We'll separate your family. You'll never see your kids again. That was the implicit threat, and not necessarily so implicit at times, from the Trump administration the first time around. Now it's don't come to this country. We'll ship you down to a torture hellhole in El Salvador from which you will leave in a coffin. Now it's don't come here and try to raise a family with an immigrant. Even if you're an American citizen, as Jennifer Vasquez Sora is and her kids are, we'll terrorize your life too. This is just to try to make everyone darker than a paper bag, scared to be in this country. And I'll give you a perfect example of that. This just took place in a courthouse in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Do not touch me or impede me in my lawful duties, ma'am. Do you understand? It is a crime for you to do so.
Why? Do you have a warrant for his arrest? Do you have a warrant for his arrest?
Yes.
Where?
Hey, grab him.
Warrant for his arrest.
Get off me or I am calling the U.S. attorney and prosecuting you for assault on a federal officer.
Show us the warrant for his arrest. Show us a warrant signed by a judge.
Turn him around.
You don't have a warrant.
Sir.
Show us a warrant for his arrest.
We are officers with Homeland Security.
You don't have a warrant signed by a judge.
All right, Senor Dominguez. No se preocupe.
You don't have to... No,
no necesitas decirle nada. No necesitas decirle nada sin abogado. No firme nada sin abogado.
Ready? Yep. Let's go out, please.
That's the scene where Senor Dominguez, as you heard, was just leaving the courthouse in Charlottesville, Virginia. And yes, that's the same Charlottesville where the Unite the Right rally happened and Heather Heyer was killed by the Nazi who ran her over with the car. Yes, that Charlottesville. In that courthouse, this man, Senor Dominguez, a painter, was up on charges of assault having to do with a fight he got in with a roommate. And the charges were dropped. And so he's leaving the courthouse, a free man, charges are dropped, when this bespectacled, red-headed ICE thug stands in front of him. Two other thugs stand to either side of him. One of the thugs, wearing a backpack and has got those zip-tie handcuffs on the side of it, and wearing a balaclava, one of those full-head masks that just has the eye holes through it. So masked thugs, unmarked, the first guy, the guy you hear talking to him saying, don't impede me, he's wearing like a pink polo shirt, or a pink button-up shirt and slacks. He looks like any other guy off the street. They're not showing any badges. They don't have any official uniforms on. There's no way you can tell these guys are cops. Coming into a courthouse and just rousting this guy, throwing cuffs on the back of him. The women you hear defending Senor Dominguez there are from a task force, a group of volunteers that listen for, you know, ICE alerts and come out there to help these guys assert their rights. And you heard her saying, you don't have a warrant. You don't have a warrant signed by a judge. This is just ICE grabbing people out of courthouses now. And we've heard the reports before, out of schools, out of churches. They had no warrant for this guy. They got him and they got a second guy, another painter. And this guy was in paying a fine on a DUI. So great message that we're sending out there to all the immigrants who might be in this country. Don't try to follow the law. Don't, whatever you do, don't come in and pay your fines. Don't respond to subpoenas. Don't go to the courthouse. This was the Charlottesville Commonwealth attorney, Joe Platania, who said, quote, it would be unjust should federal enforcement activities in and around local courtrooms have a chilling effect on the appearance of undocumented victims and witnesses. And Nicholas Rapucci, who's the head of the Charlottesville Office of the Public Defender, also had concerns saying, quote, "Is it worth the trouble to go to court? I think it's going to make it much harder, inherently harder, and more likely that people will disregard lawfully issued subpoenas, both by the prosecution and by defense attorneys and by civil attorneys, and even, perhaps, dare we say, in divorce cases or custody case hearings, that people are going to evaluate whether or not it makes sense to follow lawful state orders." Exactly. This is always what we bring up, you know, when they have the issue of getting driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants or any of these other things. You want people to follow the law. This is why we don't want local cops trying to enforce immigration laws. You don't want the local cops and the local courts trying to tie people up with what their federal immigration status was, because then the people who are here without documented status will not cooperate with the law. They will avoid calling the police when there's violence. They will avoid calling the police when there's abuse or thefts. They don't want to have their name taken up and given to the ICE Gestapo to come round them up and ship them off to our concentration camp in El Salvador. This just creates more lawlessness. They had no warrant to pick this man up, and we're hearing reports now. Got the report this morning. Court documents have revealed they had no warrant for picking up Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia student, the Gaza protester that they abducted. No warrant for him either. And now reporting coming out of the New Yorker that's saying that ICE has quotas. Some hundreds that they have to pick up in some locations, some 12 to 1500 people daily nationwide that they've put out of a quota for their mass deportations now. This is lawlessness. Yes, we do want to have lawful immigration, but the Trump administration is going after people who have lawfully immigrated. I read you the face-eating leopard story the other day of the man pleading with Trump, "Don't deport my wife. We've spent $10,000 on her immigration paperwork." I have that same story in my family. I've got family members who are dreamers, who have been in the United States since they were a kid, who have been contributing, law-abiding members of society who've created multiple businesses, employed dozens of people, have beautiful grandkids for me, who've spent $20,000 on all the lawyers and the paperwork necessary to maintain legal status. We will hang our heads in shame in the future, recounting this history. This goes right there in the history books with all the other shames of genocide and slavery and ecocide and internment. No more. Never again. It's time to put a stop to this. It can't be a day too soon that we rein in ICE. I say all of us on the left who were talking about abolish ICE a few years ago, do you understand what we were talking about now? Do you understand why it's bad for the United States to have a Gestapo, a secret police, a show-me-your-papers law? My grandpa fought Nazis over there so we wouldn't have to fight them over here. But I suppose we didn't live up to that. We didn't live up and honor our commitment to democracy. So now we got to fight them here. Well, that's what we're going to do. I saw the notification come across my social media from Attorney General Barbie Bondi. She writes, quote, "It is past time to end the anti-Christian weaponization of government started by the last administration. As per President's executive order, the DOJ held the first task force to eradicate anti-Christian bias meeting today. Thank you to my fellow cabinet members for joining me in this fight," and blah, 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 she goes on. Anti-Christian bias task force in a country that is 63% Christian. We have an anti-Christian bias task force In a country whose motto is "In God We Trust," we have an anti-Christian bias task force. In a country that has a federal holiday for the birth of its savior, we have an anti-Christian bias task force. In a country whose government opens up their congressional hearings and sessions with invocations, religious invocations by a chaplain, we have anti-Christian bias in America. Just, oh my God, anti-Christian bias. So first of all, I hope everyone understands that when the right talks, they're speaking in code. We'll talk a little bit about more about this in the rant, but the right is speaking in code. And when they say anti-Christian bias, they mean you're anti our Christian bias. We have Christian biases. Like, we have a Christian bias against gay people. And we like to express that Christian bias by banning gay people, by forcing them into the closet, by denying them equal rights. And you are anti our Christian bias. That's what we're talking about. They want the freedom in the name of their religion to openly discriminate against people. And I've said it many times. Your religion, your God, your scripture demands sacrifice from you. From you, the believer. You are required to sacrifice, not the rest of us. So we're going to have a pluralistic secular democracy with equal rights and justice for all. At least that's the goal. Even the gay people, even the black people, even the immigrant people, even the disabled people, even the trans people, we're going to have equal rights and justice for all. Now, as part of that equal rights and justice for all, you're welcome to have your freedom of religion. You may believe what you want to believe. And you may believe these scriptures say that gay people are horrendous abominations. And that means you are free to not be gay. That's right. You can sacrifice. You can push down those homosexual urges in service to your scripture and your God. You may do that. You may not have all the rest of us do that. So enough of this anti-Christian bias. How about setting up a task force for anti-Islamic bias? Plenty of that in the United States of America. How about some anti-Semitism task forces? Now, I know that this administration is using anti-Semitism as a cudgel to go after anybody that disagrees with Israeli Zionism. But how about some real anti-Semitism task force? Like, you know, if, say, some guy was out there always talking about how he likes to have Jews counting his money, maybe we could do something about that guy with some anti-Semitic task force out there. Maybe if this guy were out there saying that if you voted Democrat, you couldn't be any kind of good Jew, maybe we could have an anti-Semitic task force go after that guy. You know, that guy named Donald Trump. In international news, the UK Supreme Court has decided that, with respect to its Equality Act, that the terms woman and sex refer to the biological sex of a woman, meaning the sex that one was assigned at birth is then determined what woman's rights are and sex segregated spaces are. And this has caused all sorts of hurt and upset out there in the trans community. And I have to always preface these discussions by explaining that I'm a recovering transphobe. And it's difficult. It's a difficult topic for me to talk about because maybe I just don't have enough understanding. But I want to be on the right side of history. I can sense that the trans people are the victims in this situation. I understand that trans people exist and always have. My issue has always been that the arguments in support of trans rights suck. They're hard to make. They're hard arguments to support, especially when you're trying to convince people to be on the right side of history, which I want to be. And I want to support all my trans friends and the folks that I know. It's just, I don't know how a court could come up with any different ruling. When we're dealing with a court of law, we have to deal with that which can be proven, that which can be measured. So if you have laws that establish certain rights for a woman, then you have to define what a woman is. And under the law, it can't be anyone who says they are, because you can see how that would leave a law rife for abuse. Again, not saying that the abuse happens necessarily. There's all sorts of laws that are passed that are based on hypotheticals that maybe they could happen, maybe they wouldn't happen. But under the law, you have to have something that you can point to that proves something. And when it comes to proving someone's a woman, having a biological definition is something you can prove. But someone just saying so isn't. It's not something you can prove. So I don't know how a court could come up with a different answer than to define sex biologically. And it gets to the root of what I think the problem is in these transgender discussions. And I've discussed my, I don't know if I can call it even evolution, my progress on this issue, because I thought we had it all figured out. It used to be that we understood sex was physical. You were born male or you were born female. But gender is a spectrum. You can have all sorts of spectrum of gender. Some girls can be tomboys. Some boys are effeminate. And there's this whole range of who you could be. And then we kind of understood that that range could even be farther than the tomboy or the effeminate boy, and even range into the point where you are actually internally, mentally, a woman, even though you have a biological male body, or you're a man in your mind, in your gender, but you have a biologically female body. Boys will be girls and girls will be boys. It's a mixed up, muddle up world for Lola, right? The Crying Game, Boy George, Dennis Rodman, Grace Jones. I mean, I thought we all had it figured out that when someone was transgender, they were of one sex, one physicality, but living as another gender, the other gender, male or man or woman. You were male or female body, but man or woman mind. I thought we had that figured out, that a transgender woman was a biological male living as a woman, because inside they are a woman in their brain. But somewhere around 2013, I think it was, as became am. I'm not living as a woman. I am a woman. And woman became synonymous with female. And then sex now was a spectrum, as well as gender. And then there was no line between the two. Sex and gender are the same thing, and they're all one muddled spectrum. And when you try to bring this up, you try to talk about it, because my method is Socratic. I go out online and I have arguments and I try to discuss things. Boy, you get called names and hater and bigot. And I understand that the guys, the Matt Walshes and, you know, those people out there, J.K. Rowling's and stuff, are hateful about this. I'm not trying to be hateful. I'm trying to come up with an argument that I can take back to cousins in Idaho and explain it to them. Because the cousins in Idaho all grew up with boys and girls. When they went to P.E., they were in boys' P.E., and all the boys they saw in the locker room had penises. They were all boys. And I said, I assume that for my girl cousins, it was the same experience, except in the locker room for the girls, it was all boobies, right? And vaginas, right? We all had an understanding from the very beginning, from our very earliest as children, that there were boys and there were girls. And it's, we can understand the trans part, that someone internally doesn't match up with the expectations of what a boy is supposed to be or act, or what a girl is supposed to be or act. But none of that ever changed the physicality of who you were physically. And when you try to bring it up, you try to talk about this online with people, you get what I call the high horse laugh. Oh, you think sex is just male and female. Oh, you think sex is just XX and XY chromosomes? Oh, you're so uneducated. Don't you know about the syndromes and the intersexual? And they start talking about these fringe 0.0004% cases to try to distract from the fact that we all grew up with a PE locker room full of the same sex. And it makes people, when you're talking to them about this issue, feel like you're trying to pull one over on them. And it increasingly sounds to them like religion. It sounds like there's a mantra, trans women are women, trans women are women, trans women are women. Jesus is Lord, Jesus is Savior, Jesus is Lord, Jesus is Savior. Sounds like a mantra, sounds like religion. And then you try to ask a question, well, how do we define a woman then? Oh, you sexist bigot, you terrible person, to ask how you would dare define a woman. Well, yeah. If we're going to have laws that separate man and woman, you have to define what each one of those are. Personally, I think a lot of the sex segregation that we have in society is unnecessary. Why do we have women's chess, women's darts, women's archery, right? I can think of only a few scenarios where sex segregation makes any sense at all. Some athletics and certain prison situations. And even then, the problem isn't the trans women, it's the cis men. We have to have separate and weird prison situations because men are abusive, sexual, predating assholes, violent predators. I don't know. I always worry about talking about this subject. I always worry someone's going to come out, cancel, say I'm some hateful, awful, terrible bigot. I just don't understand how we expect to win the transgender arguments by trying to get people to believe in something that flies in the face of basic common sense and what they see and what they've experienced. Sure, there are intersex people and XXXY chromosomal blah, 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 blahs. Yes. And they're exceptionally rare. It'd be like saying, you know, human beings have anywhere between 2 and 7 fingers. Well, no, they don't. Per hand, I should say. No, they don't. Human beings have 5 fingers per hand, except for the exceptionally rare cases where they have that malformation that makes the claw hand, like the lobster thing, where they got the two hand there, or polydactyly, where they have an extra pinky finger, right? Like they got 6 or 7, right? Exceptionally rare genetic anomalies. But we don't go around saying it's offensive to say, give me a high five, because there are the exception 0.04% people who have 2 fingers, or some people that had amputations in their fingers. And it seems a lot of the debate gets bogged down into these extremely small populations. And it distracts from the fact that almost everybody knows men and women and who they are and can spot them from a mile away. So how do we reconcile those two sides? Because again, the side that's spewing the stuff that I just spewed is the hateful side that wants to, you know, ban transgender people from the military and not let them be able to use bathrooms and changing rooms and kick them out of sports. And I don't see that as the right way to go either. I'm going to continue to talk about this, and if anyone wants to email me or call me about this and give me another point of view, I hope you take this as good faith, that I really do want to be on the right side of history, and I do believe and support trans people and their rights. I just think the way we've been arguing for it, to say that what you think in your brain is what determines your physical sex, is lunacy. All right, let's switch our focus to the state level, where the next couple of stories also deal with my particular wheelhouse, marijuana. That's right. We're going to go to Florida first, where Governor Ron DeSantis there is in some hot water defending himself against allegations that he improperly moved some state Medicaid settlement money. So the Republicans in the State House of Representatives saying that this may warrant a criminal investigation. Here's the situation. $10 million was paid to Florida by this company called Centene, which provides managed Medicare or managed Medicaid coverage. So it's one of these health organizations that takes Medicaid dollars. And so there was a $67 million settlement by this company to the state of Florida because they were overbilling the taxpayers for prescription medications. So a fraud case, Medicaid fraud, had to pay a $67 million settlement. $10 million of that settlement was paid directly to a nonprofit group called Hope Florida. Hope Florida is a charity founded by Governor DeSantis' wife, Casey. And this charity helps people on welfare get into community-based programs for housing and work and so forth. Okay, so $10 million Medicaid settlement money going to the governor's wife's charity that helps poor people get off welfare. All right, so far so good. Here's where it gets dark. Literally. State lawmakers found that Hope Florida then transferred that $10 million to two dark money political groups, these PACs that don't have to disclose who their donors are. Those two groups then sent $8.5 million to the Political Action Committee that was campaigning against the constitutional amendment to legalize recreational marijuana in Florida. The Political Action Committee that was against the Florida Marijuana Amendment was headed by DeSantis' chief of staff at the time, a fellow named James Uthmeyer, who is now the Florida Attorney General. Okay, then. So the Medicaid funds steered to a political action committee to fight marijuana legalization in the state of Florida, which they were successful in doing, even though the marijuana legalization initiative got 57% of the vote, because in the state of Florida, you've got to get 60%. So sneaking the money out of the Medicaid settlement, funneling it through the wife's charity to dark money groups, to the political campaign that the governor himself wanted, because DeSantis was the head of the anti-marijuana legalization campaign there in Florida. There's just another example of reefer madness run wild. All right, time for our Boycott Idaho segment, where I remind you of all the reasons to avoid the handmade state. There's 63 of them now available at radicalrust.com/Idaho. Learn why I'm a red state refugee. I left Idaho in 2003 because I discovered you can. It is perfectly legal to get the hell out. So, boycott Idaho. Join me in boycotting the Idaho potato. No red state is more singularly associated with one product than Idaho and the potato. So do without a spud. Let's stick it to the red states for how they are treating and mistreating fellow American citizens. And today's Boycott Idaho, it's not so much an Idaho story. I got to be honest. It's really much more an Oregon story. But this story is only possible thanks to Idaho's continued criminalization of marijuana. Idaho is the only state in the western United States, aside from Wyoming, to have no legal medical marijuana or legal recreational marijuana. It is a crime in Idaho, a misdemeanor, and if you're caught, they now have a $300 mandatory minimum fine that you will get for possession of marijuana. So this leads to the story of Haley Olson, and reported in the Oregonian and the Daily Mail UK. Haley Olson is a young woman in her 30s who owns a dispensary in John Day, Oregon, which is in Grant County. Now, John Day is kind of on the eastern side of the state. There's not a whole lot of dispensaries on that side of the state. So she's in John Day, Oregon, and she's dating a Grant County Sheriff's deputy at the time. This is back in 2019. So in 2019, she finds herself in Idaho, in Jerome County. When she gets pulled over, cops discover she's got weed on her. So she gets arrested for the weed, of course, in the state of Idaho. And at the arrest, at the jail, she signs a form that allows the police in Idaho to search her phone. Now, let me pause the story right here. Do not, under any circumstances, sign a document that allows the police to access your phone. What, are you crazy? Oh my God. First of all, folks, let me also remind you, if you got a facial recognition, face ID, or thumbprint recognition on your phone that unlocks it, take that shit off now. Cops do not need a warrant to hold your phone up to your face or press your thumb on its screen. They do need a warrant to force you to give up a password or a PIN code. So keep that in mind. Take off the face ID, take off the thumbprint, and never give cops the authority to search anything. Never consent to a search. They take you to jail, fine. Your attorney can get you out of whatever the search was if you did not consent. He'll have a lot easier time getting that evidence thrown out. Never consent to a search. Okay, get off my soapbox. We're back to the story. So she signs this form, gives the Idaho cops permission to search her phone, and after searching her phone, they drop the weed charges. Lucky for her, this was way before they had the $300 mandatory minimum fine. So, word of this gets back to the sheriff back in Oregon, in Grant County, John Day, where she owns her dispensary, and where she's dating one of the sheriff's deputies. The sheriff thinks they're up to no good. He thinks they're up to some sort of criming. And I will just give you some background here. It is not unheard of for people that grow and sell weed in Oregon to take it to Idaho to be sold. An ounce of weed can be had in my neck of the woods out here in southern Oregon, where the weed is from. I can get you a good ounce of weed for $50. Like, really good ounce of weed for $50. I can take that to Idaho and sell it for $100 or $150. $200, depending on how far into Idaho I go. Allegedly, hypothetically, if someone were going to do that. I wouldn't, because I'm a high-profile activist, and activists and smuggler are not complementary positions. So then I just get myself out of that, first of all. So anyway, not unheard of for criming to be occurring like that, going from Oregon to Idaho. So the sheriff wants to get the phone information from Idaho. So calls up the DA there in Jerome County, Idaho, says, hey, I'm out here in Grant County, and I'd like you to get a copy of all that phone info. And Idaho says, nope, can't have it. All right, so the sheriff of Grant County goes to the Grant County District Attorney, goes to higher level there, goes to the DA, and asks the Grant County DA to get Haley Olson's phone information. Well, the Grant County DA gets a hold of Idaho's DA, the Jerome County DA there, and says, yeah, we think there might be something going on here between the boyfriend and the dispensary owner. We need to get that info, but it's just for internal purposes only. We're not going to give it to any other agency, just here in Grant County DA, Grant County District Attorney's Office. We just need a copy of that. We'll keep it to ourselves. No other agency will see it. We just want to make sure there's no criming going on here. So he talks Jerome County into doing it. Jerome County puts the information from the phone onto a flash drive, sends it out to the Grant DA. Immediately, the Grant County DA starts to share it with other people. Even though he said it was only for internal purposes, no other agency would see it, the Grant County DA goes over to the Deschutes County DA. That's in Bend, Oregon, and probably going to Deschutes because Bend is like a big city compared, you know, as far as central and eastern Oregon goes. Grant County, John Day, small town, you know, rural small town. They probably don't have the forensic stuff. Hell, they might not even have the computers necessary to look at it. I don't know. So Grant County goes to the Deschutes County DA and the Oregon State Police. They help me get a look at this phone. Look at this phone data on this thumb drive. Both Deschutes County District Attorney and Grant County DA say no, because there's no criminal investigation here. You're just fishing here. There's no charges. There's not even suspicion of charges here. So they refuse. Well, finally, the Grant County DA finds a way to get into this thumb drive on his own. And when he does, he finds nude pictures of Haley Olson, the dispensary owner, and the Grant County Sheriff's deputy she's dating. Finds all sorts of in flagrante delicto nude pictures on the phone. So he shows them to the sheriff. You remember the Grant County DA who said this would never be shown to anybody, it's only for internal purposes. He shows them to the sheriff and shows them to other deputies, which Haley Olson finds out when one of the deputies comes into her marijuana dispensary and says, hey, quote, there's some pretty smoking pictures of you going around the sheriff's office, end quote. And when it got down to suing over all of this, in court testimony, it was shown that employees in the sheriff's department were getting a good look, too. Sheriff's just showing all the nudes to everybody of the lady who runs the dispensary in John Day, which, did I remind you that John Day is a terribly small rural town? So, of course, the gossip gets out, gets to the point where she's got customers coming into the dispensary saying, hey, I heard the sheriff was passing around nude photos of you. So, she sues, of course. She sues the Grant County DA for getting that phone information from Idaho and then passing it all around, violating her 14th Amendment rights, her 5th Amendment rights, her 4th Amendment rights, all these rights that she violated. And the Ninth Circuit decides to throw the case out. They threw out the case because the Grant County District Attorney's Office has qualified immunity. Do you know what qualified immunity is, folks? QI. Qualified immunity is this doctrine that says police officers and officers of the courts, legal officials, law enforcement, have an immunity to the charges that they broke someone's civil rights, that they violated someone's civil rights, if it cannot be shown that any court has ever in the past determined that what they did precisely was a constitutional violation. That's what qualified immunity is. It basically sets the cops up in such a way that if they can find a unique way to violate your constitutional rights that no court has ever ruled on before, then they can get away with it. That's what I know, you're shaking your head. What? Yes, that is what qualified immunity is. It's this doctrine that says you can't expect a cop in the heat of the moment to know that what he's doing is violating someone's rights unless a court in the past has ruled on another cop who had done the same thing before and said it was unconstitutional. So, since there had never been a case before where one cop agency that had permission to look at her phone, because she signed the document in Idaho. Idaho had all the right to look at the nudes in her phone. But since there was no case that ever dealt with one agency that had the right to look at her phone, giving that information to another agency that did not have a right to look at her phone, then he couldn't have possibly known that was a constitutional violation. How could he have ever known that taking this woman's naked photographs and showing them all around the office to people could possibly have violated her rights? How could he ever enforce the law having to wonder whether or not sharing nudie pics was a violation of rights? Yeah, qualified immunity. This woman got no justice whatsoever. But the next time some cop tries to show off nudie photos that he got from another cop agency that got it through permission, next time it'll be a constitutional violation for someone. Oh, and the sheriff? Couldn't do anything to the sheriff because the sheriff doesn't have any supervisory role over the DA. Remember, the sheriff is the one that first asked Idaho to send the photos or send the phone information over. Then the sheriff kicked it up the chain of command to the DA who actually got it. So we couldn't rule against the sheriff because the sheriff could not have ordered the DA to do such a thing. The DA had to have done it under his own volition because the sheriff doesn't have the right to tell him what to do. So there you go. Two technicalities for the sheriff and the DA in Grant County to completely get away with showing off the nudes of the dispensary owner in John Day, Oregon. Population less than 2,000 or so. Now, the boyfriend who was also in the nude photos, the sheriff's deputy, the boyfriend was fired later that year after he was arrested on assault and sex abuse complaints. Turns out, once he got to court, he was acquitted because this case had been directed against him by the sheriff for retaliation over his girlfriend, the dispensary owner, suing over the whole thing. Yeah, she sues over her nude photos getting leaked by the sheriff's department, the DA. The sheriff goes ahead and goes after the boyfriend. He's acquitted and then wins a $1.3 million settlement with Grant County and the state of Oregon. And again, you know my opinion on these settlements. I'm glad she got the $1.3 million settlement. But why are the taxpayers of Grant County and me, an Oregon taxpayer, on the hook because a sheriff did something wrong? He should be held accountable. He should be in a database somewhere saying you can never be sheriff again, which, good news, he did lose his reelection bid in 2020. So he didn't continue to be the Grant County Sheriff. There you go. Not exactly a reason to boycott Idaho, other than maybe Idaho's Jerome County handing that phone information over to the Grant County DA. According to the court records, though, in the trial, they didn't really break any law because agencies can share info, I guess, but still seems pretty shady to me. Rant, I want to talk about something I saw in a post on Blue Sky, and I don't have the post in front of me, but the general idea behind it was how the Republicans have all these little nicknames and acronyms and wrestling gimmicks that they use to treat the American electorate like it's WrestleMania. And they were framing this as if that was a bad thing. Folks, I got to tell you one thing that you can definitely give the Republicans over the Democrats. They're better at politics. Republicans are better at politics. Democrats are better at governing. Democrats are great once you get them in the job. Getting them the job is the hard part. They're terrible, terrible at politics. And this idea that politics is being dumbed down, that they're using wrestling gimmicks, it's all who can shout the loudest. You can complain about that, or you can recognize that that's the world in which we live now, that we do live in this world of sound bites and viral clips and media attention. This is nothing new. We've been hearing about the soundbite era since the 60s and the advent of television news. It's just on steroids now in the era of social media and 24-hour news cycles. But it's interesting to me because I find that the conservatives, the right-wingers, have all these thought-abolishing terrible acronyms that they like to whip out to distract people, to distract their own people from critical thought. I call them tatas, thought-abolishing terrible acronyms. They whip out their tatas and all thought ceases. The first example of a tata, I think, is PC, political correctness. That was the first tata. And that happened when society started telling Republicans, hey, you know, you ought not be so racist in public. You ought not be so sexist in public. You ought not say these sexist, homophobic, racist, terrible things. You ought to be more polite. You ought to say things with respect for people's feelings. You ought to have some empathy. And that sort of discussion, if you frame it around empathy and consideration and being polite, well, that's a discussion that might have swayed some people. that might have gotten some people on the right to think back to their biblical teachings and do unto others, the golden rule, those kind of things. Even kindergarten lessons, be kind and share. So that's when Republicans whip out the tatas. PC, you're being so PC. That's so PC. I can be un-PC. We're not PC here. We're not about PC. And now it's all down to just two letters, PC, that don't have meaning in and of themselves. The words empathy, politeness, consideration can't be redefined. But if you can take all those things and bundle them up, wrap them in a wrapper called PC, and nobody can see what's inside, the right winger can reject it. We're just not PC. Oh, of course I'm empathetic and compassionate and polite. We're just not PC. Whipped out the tatas, distracted from the argument. We saw it with CRT, critical race theory, which is basic, which at its core meaning, critical race theory has to do with an examination of our structures in society, in government, economics, and environment that are themselves systemically imbued with racism. That not necessarily the people in charge of them are racist, and in some cases they're not, but the systems themselves are imbued with a structural racism. That's the critical race theory. But soon it became a TATA, a thought-abolishing terrible acronym, to dismiss any claims of racism. Because as the civil rights movement has made strides and we've been more welcoming to people of all races, and we've started to call out racism in a systemic way, when we see George Floyd being choked to death under the knee of that cop in Minneapolis, when we see time after time after time after time, Black people, unarmed Black people, being the victims of police brutality, when we look at statistic after statistic, name a statistic that separates into Black and white where Black people have better. I'll give you a moment. You can't come up with one. There is none. There is no statistic you can look at in which Black people are doing better than white people. That can't be because Black people are worse in whatever statistic. It has to be systemic. There must be a system that maintains this. So as we started to become aware of that and started to point that out and it started to resonate, here comes the tatas. Well, that's CRT. We don't do any CRT here. CRT, that's all about teaching white kids to be embarrassed for who they are. That's all reverse racism, make people feel guilty for slavery. It's CRT. And again, we can take something that can't be redefined, racism, discrimination, put that wrapper of CRT on it, and now it can be anything we want it to be. CRT can be reverse racism. CRT can be shame. It's a tata. DEI is a tata. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Those things are good. People, if you ask people if we should be diverse, if we should be equitable, if we should include people, they think that's a good thing. And as it started to gain traction in corporate boardrooms and in universities, this idea of, hey, you know, we've been promoting a whole lot of legacy white guys just because they're legacy white guys, just because they got, you know, a relative in the school or the business. We might be missing out on some really quality people. We ought to put together some programs that welcome in people of all ethnicities and backgrounds so we find all the best people. So we have, dare I say it, a meritocracy. That became scary to the right wing, to the racists. So it had to whip out the tatas. Whip out the tatas. Here we go. We'll package it up as we'll call it DEI. DEI. Don't ever say the actual words diversity, equity, inclusion. Just call it DEI. Wrap it up in that wrapper, and now it can be anything we want it to be. DEI means didn't earn it. DEI means quota programs, quotas of Black people. That's it. Quotas. DEI means reverse racism, getting rid of white people just so you can have Black people. That's what it is. DEI. Another tata. ESG. Environmental Sustainable Governance. recognizing, hey, we've only got one planet. Hey, global warming is a real thing. Hey, we're destroying our climate. Let's do something about it. Let's have some policies to address this. Oh, no, we can't have that on the right. No, our fossil fuel billionaires don't like that so much. So let's wrap it up in the wrapper. Whip out the tatas. ESG. Call it ESG. It's all ESG. Now it can be anything we want it to be. Oh, ESG means that you want to get rid of people's jobs for just to save some spotted owl. That's what that is. You hate people. And of course, the number one tata out there, the biggest tatas of them all, the Dolly Parton of acronyms, TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome. Yes, that's what they call us on the right. Whenever we point out any one of the thousands of problems with Donald Trump, it's Trump Derangement Syndrome. We're all just crazy. We all just think Orange Man bad. We're all blinded by our hatred of him. TDS, whip out the tatas, arrest any sort of concrete critical thought about the issue. Stop the argument in its tracks. So whenever someone whips out their tatas in an argument online or wherever, always get them to define the acronym. Play dumb. And they say, oh, we don't like all this DEI stuff. DEI, what does that mean? I don't know. What's DEI? Oh, DEI, you know, that's when they promote black people and they just... No, I know what you're saying it is. What's the acronym stand for?
Diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Oh, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with diversity?
Well, you know, blah, blah, blah.
And you've got them, right? Same thing with the Trump Derangement Syndrome.
Oh, you just have TDS. You've got Trump Derangement Syndrome.
Oh, why am I deranged about Trump? Why would I be so deranged about him?
Oh, because you just hate him.
Well, what would I hate about Trump?
Well, you think blah, 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 blah.
And then now you've got them naming the stuff that you agree is bad about Trump. So don't let them whip out the tatas and close down the argument. Make them defend every letter in the acronym. And it goes down to her.
We love the earth. So you gotta protect it, the mother. dream, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it.